All right, I have 6:30. I want to reconvene the meeting. We'll start with the reintroduction of commissioners and staff, starting on my far right.
Warren Gefeller, Russell.
Gary Hazlett, Lakin.
I'm Gerald Lauber from Topeka.
Aaron Ryder, Columbus.
Lauren Quail Sill, Hutchison.
Troy Spoor, Oakley.
He's muted.
Are you unmuted, Emmerich?
Emmerich Cross, Kansas City.
Brad Loveless, Secretary Topeka.
Mike Miller, Assistant Secretary Pratt.
Chris Tynison, Legal Counsel.
Okay, at this time, we welcome any general public comment on any non-agenda items. Is there anybody that has anything for this evening? Anything in the internet audience?
No hands raised, it looks like.
All right. Then we'll start with the continued general discussion of an economic impact study with Linda Latterman and Jeremy Hill.
Okay, can you hear me now?
We can.
Okay, thank you, Chairman and members of the commission. Thank you for having the time here on the commission meeting to spread some good news about Kansas State Parks. I know our secretary has been telling you throughout this last 18 months that Kansas State Parks have an incredible year, and that certainly is true. And we couldn't do it without our state park staff, and so I always want to do a shout out to them because they've been so great in those last 18 months. I want to tell you what we've done. We had an economic impact study that we had done, and I want to give you a little history on how we got here. We've been wanting to do an economic impact study, oh gosh, for at least 5 or 6 years. And it's taken some time to decide who to do it and put this together. And I want to say to our secretary, Brad Loveless, and Assistant Secretary Mike Miller, thank you for letting us do this, because it's certainly been something we've wanted to do for quite some time, and they saw the value in it and they let us do it. And so last year, during the midst of COVID, we started doing this economic impact study. And so I'm not going to present it, but I was feel fortunate to have Jeremy Hill. He is Wichita State University did our study. Jeremy is the director of the Center for Economic Development and Business Research at Wichita State. He has over 20 years of experience in applied business and economic research. He's known across the state, if you don't know, on all types of economic research. In 2014, Jeremy was recognized by the Wichita Business Journal with the honor of 40 Under 40. In 2016, he was named as one of 50 Kansans you should know, and I feel honored to know him. And I'm even more honored to know him because he's a user of our Kansas State Parks, and he uses our trails, and I appreciate his candidness on things that we could do better, which we know we are not perfect and we can do better, but certainly this study has really brought a bright spark to us. And so I'm introducing you today to Jeremy Hill. Thank you for presenting tonight, and I'll take questions afterwards. Jeremy?
All right, can everyone hear me and see the screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Great, I see some heads up. So yeah, it had to have started at least 2015 when this conversation started. And we've gone through different iterations and what should be included. And one of the things, you know, you could have gone out and done a different impact. Even the center could have done a generic impact. But the conversation says, what are the unique aspects to Kansas and Kansas State Parks? And I'm glad we took the extra effort, because we did a survey of visitors to talk about or to see what they were thinking about the state parks and how they related to it, which was different, because I did a literature
recording in progress.
I looked at several of them. Do you want me to start over so you get it all recorded?
No, you're fine.
Okay. So we looked at the other literature reviews and they varied, but you know, in some ways they had bigger impacts or less impacts, but our story is unique and I'm glad we did this. We also wanted to go through and look at the unique impact to businesses. So we captured a business survey and I'll highlight some of those when I go through this. All right, so usually I call it a roadmap, but it just feels right to call this a trail map agenda instead. And I promise I won't do any family pictures except for this one. Nice. I'm getting live stream here. Except for this one, I did one picture, but because it's ubiquitous to the state parks, right? This is a family-oriented activity. So I decided to put my daughter up at Elk City State Park, which happens to be one of my favorites. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about the characteristics of visitors. Get into the impact. Do it right away. Describe it. Talk about the vendors and small businesses because there is a unique story here. And although I do numbers, I look at market transactions. There are social benefits that are associated with this that we shouldn't undervalue. They actually have even more value than the actual transactions that happen that are purchases and so forth. Talk about the activities because there's a lot of different activities at the state parks and their impacts. And then we did a report for each of the state parks. And it should be noted, we have tons of data and we're going to flatten it to have a discussion, but really this is a story about the state park in each community, which is separate individual 29 stories and not really one statewide story. So, but I'll try to highlight that throughout. All right. The first thing is visitors. And if I was to kind of narrow this down to one thing, I would say visitors are looking for family-oriented fun, right? We are larger sizes than normal travel types of things, average of four, length of stay around 4 days, and you're doing camping, family time, observing wildlife, all those activities. However, sometimes averages don't really describe everything. And in this case, that's why you see this on the left. There is a large group, over 37% that come in smaller, two people that come out there and they're doing activities. Yet you also have this really large 16% that is over six people in their group with really large groups coming out and doing an activity together. So I'm talking about averages, but we got to keep in mind, there's actually a lot of variation in how people use state parks than the average. Now, we look at the demographics. Who are they? And if I was to summarize this down, the parks are for everyone, right? It didn't matter if your household made over 150,000 or under 50,000, you really had access to it. It didn't matter if you were really young or a little bit older than young or even somewhat older than young, you were still engaged in the state parks. And it also didn't matter about race. Matter of fact, and you can see this because we do these demographics by each of the state parks. When you got closer to more diverse areas of the state, you had more diverse people participating in those state parks. So it really doesn't matter. It's available to everyone. And to put this as a counter to it, there are activities that are not available to everyone. Like you think about snow skiing, right? There's a huge investment cost, things like that prevent everyone from going to. However, state parks as a unit is available for everyone. Now, how are they spending? Again, we gotta be careful, you know, averages are averages and there's a lot of color in between it. But if we take that average party of four, staying over 4 days, we're spending about $510. Excluded from that, and we really had to exclude this, is this outdoor recreation equipment investment. There was massive amounts of investment in RVs and campers and equestrian, which
Hang on, Jeremy.
Do we have Linda?
Linda, can you hear us?
Yeah, Jeremy, hold on. We can't hear you. I don't think he can hear us either.
I can't hear yourself. No.
Can you give him?
signal.
Recording in progress.
Not getting much.
We lost Jeremy. Do you have his number to stop him? I don't think he can hear us.
Can you hear me again?
Now we can.
Yep, there we go. Yep. Someone give me a thumbs up. I saw I was muted there.
I can hear you now.
So do I need to back up?
Yep, back up.
All right.
Back to the $510 investment.
Where do we stop off at?
$510 investment back there.
All right. So in this spending, right, we're spending on average around $510 as a group, but it varies dramatically, right? And as I was sharing, we talk about these large investments. We had some that were very large on RVs and so forth. The thing that we should take away from this is, you know, this visitor spending is, it doesn't matter your, now I've got something in the way now. Things keep popping up on this, but normally I don't have. You can spend based on your interest and your financial ability, right? There's not a barrier to coming in as in other types of activities. It doesn't matter. You can spend on what you're interested and you can have accessibility to the state parks. All right. Now we get to impact. You take that spending and multiply it by visitors. And what we did for the impacts, and this is an important note to remember, we did it based on 2015 to 2019 average because we had a increase to 2020, right? And 2021's bigger. And we, at the time we were doing this, we weren't sure how long-term that will stay. So this is an even more conservative approach, saying the 6.8 million people times that multiplication. But that undermines the story of how state parks played a role in during the pandemic. And on here on the left is very helpful to look at this. It tells a story. I'm sure there's some people in the audience that use an Android phone. And thank you for doing that, because in your Android phone, we can see when you go from your house to any park. And this index shows at the US level, people increased about 50 basis points during the pandemic over the pre-pandemic year. However, in Kansas, we increased 130 basis points, right? It doesn't really matter what the basis points, we had a much larger increase in going to parks in general. The only way to get to this is we had to have resources, a capacity, and relationships. There's a lot more that had to go into it. Now, how do you think about this during the pandemic? Because we had the lack of access to other things, and because of all the stress, our state parks were there and were accessible and actually used during the pandemic as a form of respite, right? That's where they got places to deal with the stress. Whereas obviously at the US level, there was much less accessibility in other states. All right, that gets us, you multiply the spending times the number of people, or again, we did the lower number, not the 2020, and you get this overall impact of 5,000 jobs. But I need to tell you how you get there. You gotta start by direct. And this is a cool story right here. If you take the full-time equivalent of everyone working at the state parks, 119 people, that's a small number of people, with, by the way, expenditures around $4.7 million, you add in indirect. Indirect is all that consumer spending, you going out buying s'mores and all these other things you need to do to get ready to go and consume your experience at a state park. You add in induced, this is the supply chain. This is these businesses that support the state parks and support all these other restaurants and retailers to do that. That adds another 427 jobs. You get to this 5,000. Now, normally you look at impacts and you have like a multiplier of 1.5, which would be great. You know, for every direct job you have, you've got another half of a job somewhere else. But in this case, you have only 119 people producing and supporting another 4,900 some people in the economy. So that's a pretty dramatic support of other jobs out of very few people that are actually directly employed. And same thing when you go to the output, you spent 4.7 million, but you get a much larger multiplier to how that impacts all these other businesses in the state economy. Another thing we didn't include in that number that was ahead was construction. And we didn't include it because construction varied across different state parks. So it's transitory, it goes up and down, but at the state level, it's actually pretty consistent when you average it out. And it adds another 29 jobs, another $1.6 million to that impact above. I already told you there's a really neat story about the community and the vendor. So let me switch over to that. And on here, I want to start off talking about the community. These communities are rural, right? You can already look at it and you already know they're all in rural communities across the state. When you look at their population, population's flat or declining, and total employment in these communities are flat or declining. However, leisure employment, which this is in the leisure and hospitality sector, and you support the leisure and hospitality sector, has been growing this entire time. Now, when you look at the share of leisure and hospitality to total employment at these 29 locations, and you compare it to total employment, and then compare that to the US, you get something called, I hate to get a little wonky on you, but a location quotient. And what we've found is that of these communities where there are state parks, you had a higher location quotient in leisure employment. What does that mean? The takeaway is, in these rural areas, these are economic drivers, right? In the rest of the state, you might have biotech or aerospace or logistics sector that drives the economy. In these rural economies, this leisure through state parks are driving those economies. Particularly, if we come back and see the 2020 and the 2021, their economies are doing so much better in taxable retail sales. Their economies are doing better in other employment because that leisure and hospitality has been more robust. During a period of time, leisure and hospitality was struggling across the state because we shut down the economy. All right, the profiles of the business, they are small independent businesses that have been around 30 years, right? They're in all different kinds of sector, but they're small and independent businesses. These are supporting, although some people consume at a Walmart, but this, the core value to this is going back to the small business around each of these state parks. I wish I could talk more, but we asked them questions very specific to COVID, right? How resilient were they? These businesses were growing before COVID, they grew during COVID, and they're expected to continue to grow further on after COVID, right? This is an expanding and pretty resilient sector of these small businesses that are related to these state parks, right? Taking that same 5,000 people and splitting up by sector, you can see retail, this is called the trade sector, is the largest sector that gets benefit from the state parks, over 3,400 jobs. You have service sector, which you get into marine services, things like that, of 1,400 jobs. Now, I told you I wanted to go, then is social benefits. And I hope you go and look at these in more detail and really break them down, because we can look at market transactions as state parks, you know, have an impact on the state. But then you have other things that are sometimes not tangible. How do you put a value to some things? We asked them their perception about state parks. And if I was to summarize this, they're saying this is a genuine, authentic experience that adds meanings to their life, right? That's a pretty bold statement, and they're pretty consistent across all the different age groups, the different races. Everyone saw that this adds meaning to their lives is the way they viewed this. It was very authentic, genuine, natural. When you ask them, how do you personally benefit from this? You really get the story of families were inspired by them and they were enriched by their experience. I added this generational aspect of baby boomers and Generation X. It didn't matter how old you are. It was non-discriminatory, right? Everyone had the same personal benefits. It's really core to our nature as humans to be connected to nature sometimes. And you clearly see that throughout this, their responses. All right, activity impacts. So we take that same 5,000, and some people have different interests. You might want to go boating, fishing, whatever you might want to do. So we ask them questions of their primary purpose in all activities. The top ones are primary. So for fishing, if you went for your primary reason was to go fishing, that at least supports 192 jobs across the state, contributes at these state parks. But sometimes you actually might be primarily going for camping, but you also are going for fishing. We're not counting that. You might be going for multiple reasons, and we're not counting all that. We wanted to figure out what's the least core value of each of these activities to the state park. So for policy decisions, you can start thinking, what is the value as a driver of these state parks? Not only as a whole, but we also have this with some analysis of some of these other state parks. What is the value of each of these, and how do we think of it as a policy? The bottom three are all activities. So although observing wildlife wasn't the primary reason a lot of people went out, almost everyone had that as at least a secondary. So we put that as all activities. Same thing with family time and hiking, just because so many selected them, we want to do it. I also want to highlight two because these two were, they surprised me, I guess. Equestrian was one of them. There wasn't a lot of activity, right? This didn't consume tons of people wanting to do equestrian. However, when we did the survey, they had a lot of spending associated with it. Because they had a lot of spending associated with it, the dollar you get for the very few people that attend actually generates a lot to these local economies, particularly the very local economy. They buy before and they buy right at that location. They can't buy in between. They're not stopping. They drive all the way to the location and get there and set up and go. It had a big impact on these local communities when they were engaged in doing that. The other one was special events. And I have a thing about this a little bit more, how I wanted to word this, but I still kept it this way. Special events have this untapped value to enrich local communities. I was surprised when I looked at the special events on how engaged they actually were. Some of them were engaged in such a way that they were getting different groups of people into the state parks to be engaged that they probably would otherwise be. And they actually had a really large impact on the community. The reason why I say it's untapped, because as we were evaluating and had discussions, I think really expanding more on these special events would bring more diversity to these state parks and add a whole lot more economic value to the local communities that are around it. So although I said it's untapped, they're definitely using them for special events, but there seems to be a lot more value there to then continue to add value to the other parts of the state park system. All right, we did this, I showed you this impact of activity. You won't be able to read this on purpose. Here's just a selection of what it looks like for hiking and biking trail use. We have an overall impact, we have it by the sector, and you can see some details of how they were spending at that location and across the states, right? You can see the value that they generate even by taxes, local, state, and so on for the entire state through sales tax and so forth. You can see in here, which I love to hike, by the way, they tend to be smaller groups than the average, right? They're much more solitary in that kind of activity versus, you know, the other camping, which gets to be a larger group of activities. All right, move over to parks. And I was trying to say this, is we can flatten this out and say, here's the impact of the states, but really, and I have this number, the big majority of this is going around each of these state parks. They're benefiting these regional communities and they're engaged in those communities. So when we did this, we have a report, and I just highlighted them. You can see this. This is Elk City State Park. These are the various pages they get. So you have the overall impacts. You have this market trends locally. So what is going on in that economy around Elk City? Are they growing? Are they declining? What's their tax base? And how is this impact actually influencing on those local, that local community? We took the survey data because they varied from state park to state park. The demographics changed, their perceptions changed. So we add that in there so that each state park can tell their own story. How are they using special events? How is equestrian might be bigger or might not be important to one state park where it is another state park or fishing or so forth? So we broke this out so that they could tell their own story. And really this is 29 stories, more than really one story. All right, so what are the takeaways? Honestly, I just pulled the headlines I put in most of these slides. I just pulled them forward because each person might have a different story that resonates with them. If you were to remember something, you know, these state parks are supporting over 5,000 jobs, $130 million of labor income in an average year, non-pandemic or post-pandemic yet. If we've built so much capacity or we've had so much interest in state parks, we had new activity, and those households, we already know by real data, they put a lot of investments to be engaged in the nature more, all the RVs and boats and all those things. The question is really, what is that persistence where they're going to want to be engaged long-term on the state parks? And I really won't try to speculate on this, although I think it's obvious there's going to be some stickiness to that. And there's going to probably be some increased demand than it was prior to pandemic. Because when you look at the surveys, they were still highly satisfied. They saw value out of it. You know, the question is, what is the capacity to keep up with that in the future? How do we keep maintaining those so that their satisfaction remains high? So when they go there, they see an authentic place where we're continuing to build those natural resources that give them those meaningful experiences that they're wanting to have. All right, hopefully I didn't go too long. I paused a little bit. Hopefully that didn't take me too long. We can still answer questions for you.
Okay, does anybody, any of the commissioners? Do you have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I mean, a lot of good information here. I just, Linda, based on the takeaways, is there any particular action that you see right now that you want to take to capitalize on any of that?
Thank you, Commissioner Gefeller. We allow our team or empower them to do their own special events. So we let them brainstorm on what they need to do. I think our challenge is, and Jeremy, you did an excellent job, by the way. Our challenge for me is to make sure that our users stay engaged and we provide memory making activities that they'll want to come back on. And to where that our facilities are well maintained and we continue to put our money to upgrade our facilities so people will come back. We've got to upgrade our facilities and add more camping space so that we can keep users coming. But we knew this all along, but we needed something better than just me saying we're doing a good job. And I think finally, I will say, I need to keep my team feeling valued. They're doing an excellent job. I want them, the morale to stay high and for them to know because of them, this is what has taken place.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I might add to that, Secretary Lovis. That's a good question, Commissioner Gefeller, and I appreciated Linda's response. One of the neat things that I've seen as I've traveled around the states is how integrated our parks are with their local communities, right? You saw that as an economic drive or an opportunity, and I see that as I go around. To Linda's point, her staff, they live in these communities, and the communities see a great opportunity to have events, whether it's a car show, an antique camper show, a quilt show. I see them all around the state. And so it's not like we're working independently. And that's one of the neat things. But we definitely hope to grow that. And the study, I think, pointed out that we have more headroom. So it's pretty exciting. But our folks really are well connected with those communities. And I think they're trying to keep the churn going as far as new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Any other questions?
Jeremy, you did a great job. We thank you for doing this for us.
Is there a way to get the slide deck?
We have access to the study, and so we can share that with all the commissioners. Okay. We are going to use that study and the data from that liberally. And every year we get into the legislative session, and there's questions about if we should be doing what we're doing and what the benefit is. And this is an overriding endorsement of the value we bring, especially to those rural communities, mm-hmm. right? They depend on us. And so we'd love to share it with you. We'll definitely be sharing it with our legislators.
Okay, good. Well, if there are no other questions, thank you for your presentations.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy.
All right. Next up, we will have Wild Turkey, Ken Fricke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Sorry you couldn't be there in person tonight. Would like to do some hunting out west, but had to stay here in Emporia. Kent Fricke, small game coordinator at the Emporia Research and Survey Office. Tonight, wanted to wrap up our discussion for this year of wild turkey harvest regulations for both the spring and fall turkey seasons. Overall, in 2021, we had a decent year, I think, in terms of production, primarily in the eastern portion of the state. Out west, we had some dips and a little bit of stable but low production. But in general, I'm pretty optimistic in our eastern third of the state with the production numbers that we saw this year. Going down into the recommendations for this year, and just a quick recap of the last 6 months that we've been presenting to the commission. Overall, we do not have any recommended changes to spring or fall bag limits for 2022. Additionally, we do not recommend any changes for the 2023 season dates. And so of particular interest may be the regular season start date in the spring 2023 And that'll be, if approved, April 12th, which is, as we know, one of the, or the earliest start date for the regular season. So that'll be in 2023. We are making recommended changes to the youth season eligibility. We're standardizing that across our species groups, and I believe turkey is the last group to go through that process. And so we're recommending an increase to 17 and under to be eligible to participate in the spring turkey youth season. And we're also making a slight wording change for the spring regulation on the Unit 2 boundary. We just found some verbiage issues there and just making sure that the boundaries are clearly delineated in the regulation. And then finally, we are making recommendations to allow shot shooting handguns as legal equipment for both the spring and fall turkey seasons. And if approved, as written, those would have, we're recommending a minimum barrel length of 10 inches. That includes the chamber. And again, that's both for both the spring and fall seasons. And so I believe first on the list is KAR 115-4-4A, which is legal equipment and taking methods. And as you can see in your briefing book item, this is inserting language that talks about that allows the choked handguns and muzzle-loading handguns that shoot shot. Again, we have a 10-inch minimum barrel length, including the chamber, and you, just like our shoulder-mounted shotguns, using only size 2 shot through size 9 shot. And for that regulation, I'd be happy to address any questions.
Are there any questions for Kent? Any questions from the public? Well, that's 115-4-4A. And we vote on this. So I'd like a motion for approval.
Move.
Can I have a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that we pass KAR 115-4-4A as presented. Is there any discussion? Then let's vote, Sheila.
Commissioner Cross?
Yes.
Commissioner Gefeller?
Yes.
Commissioner Hazlett?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryder?
Yes.
Commissioner Sill?
Yes.
Commissioner Spohr?
Yes.
Chairman Lauber?
Yes.
Passed 7-0.
And then next, Mr. Chairman, we have KAR 115-25-6. This is the spring season bag limits, permits, and game tags. And there on the first page of that regulation under 2A, that's where the addition of the increase in the minimum or maximum age for the youth season for the spring season is defined as 17 of age, years of age or younger. And then on the second page under heading 2 for unit 2, there was just some language added there to basically complete the circle for unit 2. We were missing the verbiage that included the state boundary with Nebraska. And so we cleaned up that language and closed the circle on the definition of that unit. And again, that regulation also includes bag limits and season dates, which we are not making any recommendations to change.
Okay. Any questions on 115-25-536? If not, I'd like a motion for approval.
I'll move approval.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we approve KAR 115-25-5-6. Is there any public or any comment from the public or the commission? Then let's vote. Sheila?
Commissioner Cross?
Yes.
Feller?
Yes.
Commissioner Haislet?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryder?
Yes.
Commissioner Sill?
Yes.
Commissioner Spohr?
Yes.
Commissioner Lauber?
Yes.
Pass 7-0.
Okay, is Doug out in the crowd?
Good evening. This is Doug Nygren, Fisheries Division Director. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Excellent. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Regulation 115-2514 is the regulation that sets our seasons, creel, and length limits, and our reference document for regulations that differ than the, from the statewide regs. In the version in the briefing book, you will find that we've made some adjustments, which include adjusting the length and creel limits within the reference document, as well as standardizing the age of youth participation in our fishing programs, and then a proposed version that would change some trout waters from 2 to type 1. I'll start with the changes in the trout waters. That is in the actual regulation, and we're proposing that Colby Villa High, Mineland Wildlife Area, and Sherman County Smoky Gardens Lake be changed from type 2 to type 1 waters. We feel that people fishing there during the trout season are primarily fishing for trout, and therefore it would be appropriate for them to have the trout permission, the trout permit on in their possession when they're fishing. Any questions on that? Okay. And then the rest of the changes I have are to the reference document, and that's the document where we have regulations that are different than the statewide regs. I've been through these with you on workshops before, but the ones that I think are most of interest to the public and probably to the commission include Tuttle Creek Reservoir. This is a success story with the population of blue catfish maturing there. We're ready to start allowing people to harvest those fish in a much bigger way than they've been able to in the past. Currently, we have a 35-inch minimum length limit and a 5-a-day creel. The proposal, though, would change it to 10-a-day creel limit with no more than one in the creel over 30 inches long or longer on blue catfish. Marion Reservoir is an interesting case study and a pilot project on an innovative way to improve the quality of walleye fishing at Marion, where we put in place 2 years of protection with a larger length limit, followed by 2 years of more liberal harvest. And so what we're proposing is to go from the current regulation, which is 21-inch minimum length limit, 5 per day, and change it to an 18-inch minimum length limit for next year with a 3 per day creel, with only one in that creel of 3 over, that can be over 21 inches long. We'll do that for a couple of years, and hopefully if it has the desired impact, then we'll, in about another 2-3 years, we'll switch back for a couple more years of more restrictive harvest to allow that population to once again build back up again. We'll be evaluating it at the end of the first cycle, and we'll probably be having our fisheries biologist, Craig Johnson, come to the commission with the results of what's happened with this innovative approach to walleye management. The next one I think that's of interest is Cedar Bluff Reservoir. We've been operating there for walleye fishing with a 21-inch minimum length limit and a 5-a-day creel, and we're proposing to maintain the 25-inch minimum length limit and 5-a-day creel limit on walleye, except that two fish 15 inches long or but less than 18 inches long may be included in the daily creel. This will allow some harvest there to help us a little bit with some forage issues that we've experienced over the last couple of years. Another one of interest is probably the change at Bone Creek Reservoir. We've been operating with a 13 to 18 inch slot length limit on black bass, on largemouth bass. We're proposing to change that to an 18 inch minimum length limit. We're trying to recover from largemouth bass virus that's kind of hit that population kind of hard. And we've also made the switch from managing it primarily for both sawguy and black bass. And we're going to really try to focus in more on the black bass as a result of input that we receive from anglers. So we're going to liberalize the creel limit on sawguy from 2 per day to 5 per day next year if this regulation change passes. Harvey County East Lake is another lake that we've had problems with our largemouth bass population, and we're proposing to change to an 18-inch minimum length limit there and remove the 13 to 18-inch length limit that's currently in place. Does anybody have any questions about any of these length and creel limit changes at this point?
Anybody have any questions for Doug?
Commissioner Spohr, is the blue cat population at Tuttle Creek a problem, or is it going to be a problem if you don't harvest more?
It's a population with a lot of individuals and high density. You probably saw some of the pictures during the dewatering of the Stilling Basin a year or two ago, where there was just tens of thousands of fish down below that had gone through the dam and into the Stilling Basin and down into the Tuttle Puddle. So it's been a tremendous development there, very successful reproduction. We don't have the quality there that we have other places, but the numbers are certainly good. So by going with this 10-a-day creel limit, that will take advantage of the abundant resource there. And for those folks that want to go catch maybe the quality trophy size fish, they just not very far away, they can go hit Milford. So it gives the people a great opportunity to kind of pick between numbers or size in that particular region of the state. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions for Doug?
Okay. Then finally, the last change in the reference document has to do with standardizing the agency's youth mentor programs. On the fishing side, we've had youth mentor fishing locations, which are for children under age 16, can be accompanied with adults 18 or older. But the definition of youth on the wildlife side for a lot of our hunting opportunities is 18. So we're proposing to change our youth mentor language to say licensed adults 18 years or older may fish youth mentor designated waters only if accompanied by a person younger than 18 years of age who is actively engaged in fishing. And that'll give us some consistency between our hunting and our fishing programs. And with that, that's all of the information I have to share with you, and I stand for questions if there are any.
Are there any questions for Doug? Well, if not, I'd like a motion that we approve KAR 115-2514 as presented.
Commissioner Cross, motion to approve.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve 115-2514. Any discussion? Let's vote, Sheila.
Commissioner Cross?
Yes.
Commissioner Gefeller?
Yes.
Commissioner Hazlett?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryder?
Yes.
Commissioner Sill?
Yes.
Commissioner Spohr?
Yes.
Commissioner Lauber?
Yes.
Pass 7-0.
Okay, thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Is Chris Steffen presenting the next one?
Yes, he is.
Okay, Chris.
Hey, I'm Chris Steffen, Aquatic Nuisance Species Coordinator for Wildlife and Parks. I'll be presenting on 115-17-2, which is commercial sale of fishing bait. What we're proposing here is to clarify the sale of dead bait. In the past, it specified only gizzard shad. We would like to add threadfin shad, big head carp, silver carp, and skipjack herring. These are all species that are commercially available, and being that they would be sold dead, we're not concerned that they would have any sort of impact to the fisheries.
Any discussion on this? Can I have a motion for approval?
I move approval.
Commissioner second. Cross, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve 115-17-2. Is there any discussion? Okay, let's vote, Sheila.
Commissioner Cross?
Yes.
Commissioner Gefeller?
Yes.
Commissioner Hazlett?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryder?
Yes.
Commissioner Sill?
Yes.
Commissioner Spohr?
Yes.
Commissioner Lauber?
Yes.
Pass 7-0.
All right, thank you, Chris. Personal flotation devices requirements. Eric, and how do you pronounce your last name?
Deneau.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, a little back
history on this. In 2014, the U.S. Coast Guard adopted international standards for labeling of personal flotation devices, PFDs, also known as life jackets. States delayed incorporating language into statutes and regulations until the Coast Guard could secure additional testing and work with manufacturers and provide training information to the states for incorporation. The U.S. Coast Guard administers recreational boat safety grants, and since the Code of Federal Regulation change of life jacket labeling is a preemptive law, all states are required to adopt these new standards in their state laws and regulations. Failure to adopt these standards will result in the state's recreational boating safety program being placed in non-compliant status and could result in federal funding being suspended. The new life jackets will sport a new label on the inside of the life jacket, which includes the number so that purchasers now know how much buoyancy the life jacket will provide. The lower the number this is suited for nearshore activity, and the higher number offers higher buoyancy value and is more suited for offshore activities. Warnings about the activities these jackets are suited for are also included on the label and identified by images as well as a turnability rating. These warnings will let buyers know where which jackets to get from specific water activities such as water skiing or tubing. It also lets the buyers know what symbol to look for and which jackets turn unconscious wearers over. The older life jackets currently being used right now are still good as long as they are in good working condition, no rips or tears or anything like that. And they will still remain viable and boaters can still use them. And just kind of a side note, if you guys have bought any life jackets recently, they've got the new labels in them. So if you go to a sporting goods store, it'll have the new labels in them. So that's kind of a little history on it. It's 115.30-3 is the statute, or the regulation, I should say, if there's any questions.
Okay, are there any questions for Eric? I think we've workshopped this pretty good. I'd like a motion that we approve 115-30-3.
I so move.
Can I get a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that it be passed. Any discussion? All right. Let's vote, Sheila.
Commissioner Cross?
Yes.
Commissioner Gefeller?
Yes.
Commissioner Haislett?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryder?
Yes.
Commissioner Sill?
Yes.
Commissioner Sporer?
Yes.
Commissioner Lauber?
Yes.
Pass 7-0.
Okay, that takes care of the meeting. Agenda. Do we need to set some future meeting dates?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Timeson.
Yes, Chris.
Sheila, could you please tell us how far out we've gone?
All we have, I think it's June. I'm sorry. All we have set is January and March. We have January 13th in Emporia at the Aquatic Research and Outreach Center of Emporia State University. And March 31st, we have Topeka at the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library, James C. Marvin Auditorium. We do not have a date for anything else yet.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Timeson, I'd recommend that you set out through August, if possible.
Okay. So we need to set a meeting for April,
June,
and August. So what did we decide that the opening day of turkey season was going to be? The 12th. Is the 20th a Thursday?
No, the 12th is actually 2023.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So for 2022, the opening day of turkey season, I think, will be the 13th.
Okay, so is it the 20th or the 21st would be that Thursday? And
21st.
How about we do April 21st?
And that's when we plan on going back to, we're going to try Beloit again.
Okay, we'll try Beloit again.
This is the sweet spot.
Okay. And then June. What's late June look like?
23rd is a Thursday.
How about the 23rd? We need to decide where to have that.
If you have suggestions, I'll take them.
If we've slid to southeast to Emporia, that direction?
Well, Emporia is where we're going next.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. Yep.
How about Lawrence? Is that too close to Topeka?
Or do Lawrence we sounds good.
Huh?
Lawrence sounds good.
Well, we haven't had one in Lawrence in a while.
Yeah, we can show you all the work that's being done on the Bowersox Dam, talk about aquatic nuisance species.
And that'll be good.
A little field trip there.
And then August, does anybody have a suggestion?
You want to go back, like Wichita?
Yeah. What date?
How about Hutch? We never did Hutchinson. Make Hutch.
We tried Hutchinson. Let's do try Hutchinson again, because we had one set for there and we had it canceled.
Let's do Hutch.
Let's do Hutchinson. That's much better.
Thank what you. Day?
What's the middle of the month?
The 18th.
18th, yeah.
Is 18th okay?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Timison.
Yes, sir.
I would vote the 11th.
I believe Mike Miller has an opinion on the August date, and usually it's based on trying to get the regulation summary done.
Yeah, it all depends on if we're going to be voting on issues that'll be in the hunting regulation summary. It's easier the earlier we do it, the better, usually, for getting that in there.
It's been suggested that we do it August the 11th.
That's a full moon, Mr. Chair.
I'm not
for the 4th,
11th, whether it matters or not.
Are there two of you that can't make it on the 18th and one that can't make it on the 11th?
No, their options that go the 4th.
I can do the 18th. It's just the 11th fits better with work and school schedule. But I can do either.
Does the 4th help you any?
The earlier is always better when they're putting.
Does anybody have a problem with August 4th?
I don't think so.
Sounds good.
Mm-mm. Let's do August 4th at Hutchins. Well, that's moving right out there. Is there anything else to come before the group this evening? Once again, we wish you a lot of luck, Gary. We're going to miss you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to miss all of you guys, and thank you for 8 years of good stuff. It was fun.
All right. Well, glad you could be with us. I don't have anything more. If Secretary Loveless doesn't have anything more.
No, sir.
Meeting adjourned.
Final goodbye to Chris.
Final goodbye to Chris.
good luck, Chris.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Recording stuff.